thank you, everybody, for joining us on Nevada Backcountry this weekend. We've got a special guest coming up, Matt Murray, president of Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs. This is going to be a great interview. You don't want to miss it. First up, though, Dave, we got a little bit of housekeeping to cover from the last show.
Yeah,
we had some questions.
Yeah. So one of the questions was crossbows. When are crossbows legal?
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, so the only time that you can legally use a crossbow in the state of Nevada is during the any legal weapon hunt.
You can.
Yes.
Okay.
So you can use a crossbow during the archery season, but you have to apply for the archery disability permit.
Gotcha.
And that comes with, you know, doctor's visits and all of that stuff. Your doctor has to sign off that you are incapable of drawing and shooting and holding a standard compound or longbow.
Okay.
So, but other than that, a crossbow is legal during any legal weapon hunt season.
Gotcha.
And then the other one was 10%, the non-resident tags.
You know, there was that talk.
Folks were like, well, I thought every 10 tags, you got one non-resident.
Yep.
Well, how it is, it's 10% of the tag allocation.
Break that down for me.
So basically, 10% of the tags for that particular species goes to non-residents. So how it reads in the regs is it reads non-resident tags typically, that's the main word, typically make up 10% of the total tag allocation, but the exact number varies. So if there's a hunt and there's only 8 resident tags.
Okay.
Okay. And you see one non-resident tag, technically that's 10%. 10% of the allocated tags for that particular hunt.
What?
That's where it comes in that typically makes up 10% and exact number varies.
Okay. Well, I have to go back and look then because some of those that I was looking at, antelope tags in particular, non-residents were getting like 20% of the tags, but I was looking at just the hunt unit. I didn't look at as a species. I didn't look at
the total
archery
allocation.
Muzzle loader, any legal weapon, any of that.
And some of that is, you know, based on when they are doing the quotas. The Wildlife Commission and or the CABs, the County Advisory Boards, can change that slightly based on how they would like to see hunts in their particular counties. And
well, so. I'm still going to dig into it.
Oh, heck yeah, man.
But
dig into it.
Now I've got a bigger rabbit hole to go down.
Yes, you do.
Now, last but not least on the housekeeping thing before we get to our guest, a couple days ago, there was a news story on Channel 4 here locally in Reno.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Several, is what they said, arrows with broadheads wound up in somebody's shed, punched through the wall off of Mayberry Drive. I'm going to give credit to our listeners and say this was not somebody that listened to Nevada Backcountry. For those of you listening, I'm guilty of it. I shoot broadheads in my backyard. I've got a long run out behind the target, and if my neighbor's dogs happen to be, you know, 20, 30 yards off course to my right or whatever, I'm still not going to shoot my broadheads.
Yeah.
I just don't feel comfortable doing it. That said, my kids fool around with their little longbows in the backyard. They're shooting arrows with blunts, those rubber tips on them.
Yeah.
They've launched them over the fence before, and no harm, no foul. But hey, don't be the knucklehead that gets shooting of bows banned in the city of Reno. You and I were talking about it before the show. There's things can happen, right?
Oh,
A D loop breaks, whatever.
Yeah.
And
a ricochet.
You send an errant arrow. I believe it was four. That's inexcusable.
In the side of a shed. So that means you were relatively aiming in one location.
You were just
off. But when you're shooting broadheads or just shooting in general, know your surroundings. Once that arrow leaves the bow, you have no control over it after that.
Yes.
And like we were saying, ricochets, hits a fence, hits a rock, you know, does something and could cost severely.
So yes. Just cost all of us severely.
Cost all of us severely. We have a shooting facility. We have the SAB site, the county archery facility out there in
Lemon Valley.
Yep. I know it's a little ways out. We got so much public land. I mean, targets are mobile.
If If you want to goof around with broadheads or whatever,
just go out there. Yeah. Just be safe about it.
Don't do it off Mayberry Drive, which is where
this
was.
Or just any congested area. My gosh.
Period.
Just a little community awareness would go a long way.
Hey, without further ado, special guest on the show, Matt Murray, president of Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs. Matt, welcome to the show.
Yes.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm trying to cut in on what you guys were talking about. That's like rule number three of firearm and archery safety, right? Know what lies beyond your target.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So.
And the area, how familiar are you with Reno, Matt?
Somewhat familiar with Reno.
Okay, the area that both Dave and I live outside of town. We're zoned county. We both live on a little over an acre, so we have space to shoot our bows in our backyards.
Absolutely.
This was like...
Mayberry Drive's got to be in the middle of town.
It is.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep. Hey, Matt, why don't you talk to us a little bit about the organization, what you guys do, who you represent, and how you got involved?
So the organization's Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs. What we try to do is we try to provide a week-long experience for folks that have to rely on a chair or have a disability that enables them to participate in the outdoors. You know, in our bylaws, it says you have to rely on a chair for 90% of your mobility, okay? That's where the name comes from. The organization was started back in 2008. I sat on the county board in Elko. A friend of mine, Chad Bliss, you'll see his name on our website and at our hunt, sat on the state board, and we were approached by a person that with a disability that said, hey, there's nothing in Nevada for this. So the very first hunt actually was one hunter. We begged the landowner for a tag, got the tag, and hunted on the tailgate of a truck. Such a great idea. You know, a way for us able-bodied people that love to hunt and get out in the outdoors to give back to, you know, our community. At the time, I worked for Newmont Gold Corporation, and they had the TS Ranch. And I approached Dan Graylian down at the ranch there and told him, you know, hey, this is my vision. This is what we want to do. It's very difficult for us to get tags. And Dan said, let me think about it for a day. Called me back and said, look, here's what we're going to do. You guys can utilize the ranch house, and I'll give you the antelope tags that we get here on the TS Ranch. And so that's kind of what started, you know, it kicked us off there in preparation for where we are now. A good friend of mine, you can actually see our videos if you go on YouTube and search Blue Collar Adventures and then Nevada Outdoorsmen and Wheelchairs. A really good friend of mine, Jay Presti, grew up in Elko, grew up in the Lamoille area. His dad still lives out there. He lives down in Santo, Texas now, but travels the world and hunts and has a hunting show by that name, Blue Collar Adventures, and he comes out and films our hunt, which it has helped us so much get our name out there by that. So now we're not just taking folks from Nevada. I mean, we may give preferential treatment to folks that apply from Nevada, but now we have so many applications that come from all over the United States that we do a random draw. We have, you know, folks coming in from North Carolina, from Colorado, from California, Idaho, all over the United States to hunt with us, just to spend a week with us out here in the backcountry of Nevada.
The hunts, it's not like guys are applying for tags. They draw a tag, and then they get in touch with you. It's they get in touch with you, and then you guys facilitate the landowner tag. Do I have that right?
Correct. So what we do is on January 1st, on our website, we have an application process. That application opens up on our website, and you can go in and fill that out. It gives us an idea about your disability and some of your experiences and what happened, you know, whether you were injured later in life or if you were born with a disability, that sort of stuff. It's sort of a vetting process, and we go from there. So over time, like I said, we used to get tags on the TS Ranch every year, and then there's some changes there, and we've kind of moved around. For the last several years, the Miller family down in Eureka has donated the tags for us. So this year, I believe we had six tags. So we still get a tag from Nevada Gold Mines. It's typically a deer tag out on the Dean Ranch. So it's kind of a one-off of the antelope hunt. The antelope hunts really are a flagship hunt, I guess. You know, it's real. That's where we do all the fun stuff and, you know, televise it and video it and do that sort of stuff. And the deer hunt, and we also get an elk tag every year from a really nice family that has, you know, they believe in us and what we do, and they've helped change lives.
Hey, if you're just joining us, it's Nevada Backcountry. We're talking with Matt Murray, president of Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And we're back on Nevada Backcountry. Before we jump back into our conversation with Matt Murray, president of Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs, I want to give a big shout out to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. Legacy Sports has been good enough to sponsor the show since we started, Dave.
Yeah.
Can't thank them enough.
Not at all.
Dave got his antelope tag done with a Howa rifle. So go check them out. It's LegacySportsInternational.com. So before we went to break there, Matt, you were just getting into some of the crossbow legislation that you guys, and by you guys, I mean Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs, how'd you go about getting that through or getting that passed?
Well, we were just in support of it, so I don't know that we got it through or that part of it, but we participated in it. I mean, we made phone calls to our senators and congressmen, and we showed up at meetings in Reno with that, you know, hey, this is what we do, man, and we need this help. It would open up a few doors for us. And the very first year that was that came about, a local girl from Elko actually drew a deer tag on her own, and we outfitted her with a crossbow and a trigger system. It's a 12-volt trigger system, so she actually fires the trigger with her mouth.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Man, she killed a tremendous buck with her crossbow the very first year. Her name was Lizzie Broughton. Then later that year, she had drawn one of our antelope tags, too, and killed a tremendous antelope that year as well.
Very cool.
That is cool. I know that when I first started hearing that legislation, I know that myself and the board that I'm on, the Nevada Bowhunters Association, we were really leery about supporting anything with crossbows because we were worried that it was going to lead into, you know, allowing it during archery and everything else. But as some of the information started coming out and a better understanding of the parameters for allowing crossbows came to light, kind of switched gears and we're like, no, that's actually good. And then 2 years ago, one of my good friends I hunt with, his son-in-law, ex-military and was injured over in Afghanistan, can't draw a bow anymore. And that was, he was an archer. And so he came out on a hunt, but with a Raven crossbow and, you know, he wouldn't ever be able to hunt again because without that opportunity. So I really commend you guys with supporting it and helping that get across the finish line to allow more of our sportsmen and women to get out in the field. I think it's fantastic.
Absolutely. No, it's been great to you know, be able to do some of that. And there's some other legislation that we helped get to, and it's last year I think was the infancy of it, and we did get one tag. So say that David draws a tag and he's not going to be able to hunt on that particular hunt or whatever. He has the option of donating that tag back to where it goes into an alternate or it goes back into the first come first serve or whatever. He also has a choice of donating that tag to our organization so that we can take somebody out as well. And I think we ended up with a cow tag so far this year. That way a gentleman has a cow tag down towards Ely and reached out and said, hey, I'm not going to be able to do this. I would like you guys to take, someone out that has a disability and get them an elk this year. So we're scrambling to put that together and we'll have someone out here in the field in, I think, a month.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're successful in that hunt as well. So that's been huge for us. And like I said, there's not a lot of light shed on it yet, I believe. But we work closely with some of the folks over at Endow. Chrissy Rose is one of them that I deal with a lot on that portion of it. And she's just been fantastic to work with, and it's helped us out tremendously.
Yeah, Chrissy's fantastic. She's awesome. I really communicating with her. So as all these tags are coming in and landowners are providing you tags, is there a limit to how many tags you guys can take on in a year?
That's a great question, man. We were pushed to the limits this year on our antelope hunts because, you know, we have a very small board. I mean, there's like five of us total. We all work day jobs. This is just something that we do because, I mean, when you boil it down, right, you don't need a reason to help another human being out. And that's kind of what we go by. And we've always been kind of tight-knit little group, and we want people that to get involved, but we want them to get involved for the right reasons, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, with the we had, I believe, five or six tags this year down in Eureka there, and like I said, man, we were stretched to the limit. And so that's about as many as we can handle at one time. Now, if they're spread out over different seasons, it's not a big deal. Like, that's kind of why the mule deer tag and the bull elk tag work for us, because they're spread out. We have another gentleman that has helped us with the bull tag every year. I mean, he just calls in. I call him and say, okay, we have this tag. It's in 6171. And I basically hand him over the hunter's information, and he reaches out to him. His name is DJ Badia, and DJ reaches out to the hunter and gets it all set up. And like I said, he's been 100% successful over the last 4 years, 5 years that we've done that tag.
Oh, that's cool.
And the deer hunt's kind of the same way. We'll figure out who has that tag and make a couple phone calls to friends that, you know, hey, are you off this weekend, or can you take this gentleman down to the Dean Ranch on this day and on these days and get him a deer? You know, part of that whole process, we kind of talked about a week-long adventure, but we've, over the years, so we've been doing this since 2008, and over the years, we have kind of developed into a routine, and we've got some more partners and stuff like that always help us out. I've got to talk about Jeff Williams. He's a local businessman here. He's retired now, but he has a phenomenal, phenomenal gun room, okay? This place is second to none. He brings us in. If you watch our show, you can actually go on our website and see some of the photos inside his building. This gentleman's forgot more about guns than I'll ever know. And it's unreal. I can't tell you how amazing his collection is. But we started out with him. I invited him out to the TS Ranch, and he said, I'll just do a quick history of firearms. And I said, perfect. And so he rolls up to the TS Ranch, and I go and greet him, and he says, here, help me carry some of these guns over. So he starts unloading his truck, and I'll never forget it. It was my first experience of seeing a matchlock rifle in person, okay? A true matchlock rifle. And you know what a matchlock rifle is,
yeah.
David, where you light the wick and you pull the trigger and the wick dips in the pan and lights the powder.
So, yeah, good grief.
This thing was so crude and just scary looking. And so we started with that, and we went up through the muskets and blunderbusses and Brown Bess, and then the conversion to cartridge rifles all the way into a modern style, you know, AR platform rifle, and basically the entire history of the firearm. And he said, hey, next year, I don't want to bring all these guns out here. Why don't you just come to my place? And so we started going over there in about 2010, I believe, and we've done that every year, and it's just been phenomenal for us. He has a big 50 cal BMG that we've taken out, and he lets us send it, you know, down range and with our hunters, and it's just a great experience for them. And I tell people all the time, I've been there 100 times and listened to him, but I learn something every time I go, whether it's about, you know, American history or the buffalo hunters or the lawmen or even the bad guys, you know, the outlaws. And but he does have a tremendous collection of firearms that, you know, and we've been really grateful to be a part of that. And he's a true patriot and one of our team players.
We got to take a quick break. You're listening to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. When we come back, we'll get more into Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs with President Matt Murray. If you're just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry, If you miss a segment of the show, you can go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab. All the past episodes are available there. Before we went to break there, we were just starting to get into some of the firearm stuff with Matt Murray, president of Nevada Outdoorsmen in Wheelchairs. Matt, I wanted to ask you, we dove right into the crossbow thing, and my first inclination, not being involved with the organization, would be stick a rifle in their hands. What percentage do you guys see as far as folks hunting with crossbows versus rifles, or is that just dependent on the tags you have?
Part of it's dependent on the tag, and part of it is dependent on the hunter. So most all of our antelope hunts we've done, they are taken with centerfire rifles. We don't hunt them with crossbows. The young lady that I mentioned actually drew that tag on her own. And then we have another gentleman that has hunted with us a few times, and he wanted to kill a turkey with a crossbow. So we had a friend set us up in California and went over to California, and Will shot a turkey with a crossbow.
Okay, so you guys go to other states. You're not just strictly limited to Nevada?
No, we are limited to Nevada. I mean, it's difficult. We just have contacts in other states that we reach out to, and they'll bring us over, like the turkey hunts. So we do a few turkey hunts in Nevada as well, but occasionally, if we're not getting a tag here or there, we have some friends in California that have turkey hunts available, and so we go over there and shoot a turkey.
Gotcha.
We've done some duck hunts, and we've done some pheasant hunts and stuff like that. So it's, fur, fins, or feathers, man. We're going to get after it.
All right.
Very cool. So I got to ask about some of the logistics of the hunts. You were talking earlier about, you've done some mule deer hunts. You have an elk tag this year. Man, I know the mule deer hunts I've been on, that is physically demanding. How are you guys pulling this off with people in wheelchairs?
Man, you know, the thing about it is they've got to be willing to step outside their comfort zone as well. A couple things that have really opened the doors for us is several years ago, we purchased 3 track chairs, so the action tracker chairs.
Yeah. Okay.
And we outfit those, and we'll build different apparatuses that, can hold the gun and act as a rest, or, sometimes there's motors on them that will actually move the gun left and right and up and down. So we've taken folks that are quadriplegic. It's very interesting, but you just overcome and adapt, and they make the shot, and it happens, man. I always tell everybody too, if you're not a spiritual person, after you participate with us, you will believe in a higher power, because there's things that happen on these hunts that are just unexplainable. I mean, I know I've missed antelope before, and they run off, and they leave. And I've seen it on these hunts before where this antelope was right on the edge of the guy's comfort zone. I mean, he was right at 200 yards, and he's like, I'm pretty confident I can make the shot. And he took the shot. And he just a little bit short, and the antelope literally stood up and ran at us about 110 yards and turned broadside, and yeah.
Game over.
Shot.
Wow.
Kevin made the shot, and game over, and yeah. We were kind of talking about some of the stuff we do during that week, and I mentioned the Williams hunt. Recently, we've been able to go out to the Cowboys' roost in the Rubies there, and they've invited us out. So this year we went out there and did some bass fishing and had lunch with them. So there's all kinds of stuff that we do during the week leading up to the hunt. Then, of course, we go out to the range and we shoot. And so, one thing I've got to – it's hard to get across is it's all expense paid. So we're a 100% grassroots volunteer base. None of us make a penny off of it. All of the money that we generate goes to our hunters, whether it's to buy a plane ticket, kennel a dog, pay for fuel, pay for the food while they're here, everything. It does not cost them one penny to come out here to hunt with us. Once they do kill an animal, the meat is all butchered and packaged and sent back with them or sent to them at a later time. And then we also taxidermy their animal for them, whether however they want it, whether they want a full shoulder mount or a European mount. So,
oh, very, that's very
that,
cool.
That is really
part
cool.
Part of that experience.
On one of these hunts, when you get a candidate for a specific hunt, it's not just like you call them up and say, hey, meet us at the crossroads at XYZ.
And, send in grid coordinates.
You know, yeah, yeah, just kind of like, hey, meet us at the camp. It sounds like it's a pretty lengthy process of understanding the needs of that particular person and maybe requirements that you may have to have at the camp that you may not have and you'll have to acquire it. So there's probably a lot of logistics getting just to camp.
There's a ton of logistics. And so we always say, you know, okay, say this gentleman drew the tag or this young lady, whatever, drew the tag, and we allow them to bring a caretaker with them because there's sometimes they have different needs that, you know, we may not be able to perform or, you know, just for some humility too. I mean, and it also, and like I said, though, I mean, we kind of challenge all of our hunters too to get outside their comfort box. I mean, we're just a ragtag group of guys and ladies that, you know, enjoy giving back and we enjoy the hunt and we make lifelong friends during that week, but we also challenge them. I you know, we're not there. It sounds harsh, but I tell them, look, if you're thirsty, get something to drink. If you're hungry, get something to eat. If you need help, mention it to somebody and they'll help you. Otherwise, challenge yourself. You know, that's what we're all here for is independence. And it's amazing. We do a critique at the end of each hunt. And, you know, it is an antelope hunt and we are killing an animal and, you know, we like to honor that animal and that sort of stuff. But that has never been the highlight on any critique. It's always mentioned in there. But when you peel the onion back, it's always, hey, you guys spent a week. I didn't know you from Adam and you spent a week long with me just doing fun stuff and, you know, whether it was fishing or hunting. I know once this lady's no longer with us, unfortunately, she passed away. We had a fly fishing, Joe Doucette and another gentleman did a fly fishing seminar for us. And so we were out fly fishing in this private pond. Unfortunately, she couldn't cast the fly rod, right? And so she said, but I can throw a rock. And I said, well, let's skip a rock. And so we, you know, then kind of dirty, but other people were trying to fish and we're over there skipping rocks. But after that, on the way back to the camp, she just kind of teared up a little bit. And she said, man, I have not done that in so long. And she said, all these memories of me when I was a kid, standing at this lake, skipping rocks with my grandpa come flooding back. And that was the big deal to her, you know, just, we were down there skipping rocks, and that's simple like that. Like I said, it boils down to spending time, quality time, and there's a small segment during that whole week when the entire playing field is level and there's no disability on, you know, visible. And that's what we do it for, man, and it moves me. I've been doing it a long time, and it still moves me every time we get around these folks, so.
That's, man, awesome. Good for you for doing that. Hey, I got a couple questions about the hunts when we come back, but we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for hunters by hunters. I'll forewarn you, I think Mike is out on his elk tag right now. So if you got a tree emergency, get in touch with them, but they might be running a few days behind schedule. Don't go anywhere. More with Matt Murray when we come back. And we're back on Nevada Backcountry here. Do you like how I stole your intro there, Dave?
You totally
and
stole my intro.
And back.
We are back.
We're talking with Matt Murray from Nevada Outdoorsman in Wheelchairs. Before we jump back into that, thank you to Truck Envy in Reno here. Hey, they sponsor the show. Go support them. Anything you need from camper shells, lift kits, tires, wheels, you name it, they've got them. Truck Envy on South Virginia Street here in Reno. Now, Matt, before we went to break, I had a couple questions, one of which is, when I hear outdoorsmen, sportsmen in wheelchairs, etc., I think of some of these, I hate to use the word canned, but like a Texas game ranch type hunt.
Oh, gotcha.
You guys are actually pulling this off out in the wilderness, setting up a camp, doing the whole thing. These are not like they're taking the leash off the whitetail and letting somebody whack it hunts.
Nope. We're 100% free range hunting. I mean, it's the elk hunts. Like I said, we're given an elk tag on a section of land, but we can actually hunt the public land around it. And for the last 5 years, we have yet to actually kill an elk on that private ground. It's always been out on the BLM ground. Same with the antelope. I mean, we're lucky that we do get in on some private property and hunt those, but they are free range animals. And yeah, they're there one day, may not be there the next day.
Now, you were talking about some of the logistics of just setting up camp. And here I am sitting listening to you going, man, I have a hard enough time remembering a toothbrush to pack, let alone setting up a rural out there camp for some of these people. Do you guys afterwards, when you get an animal down, talk me through that process. If these folks are able, do they help in cleaning and quartering the animal?
Yeah, sometimes we have some of the guys that are in chairs that want to participate in that part of it. But basically what we do is we have, one hunter, and we'll have anywhere from 3 to 4 folks with them, spotting, driving. We do the field care on the animal. And then once it's out of the field, because, again, we're filming a show for it as well. And so it's a little different, but then we process that whole animal for them as well. But like when we were on the TS Ranch, we stayed at the headquarters there, so everything happened there. And then now that we're down in Diamond Valley, we spend a lot of time at the Paradis Sporting Clay and Captain Skeet Range there. So they have a great pavilion down there, and we set up our camp there and usually put our hunters up in the hotel rooms there in Eureka. And then we spend, like I said, all of our time out there at Paradis, where we cook dinner and sit around the campfire and tell stories and that sort of stuff. So it works out pretty well. But at least that way we have showers, because I was never around a disabled person until I started this. And over the years, I've learned quite a bit. One of my favorites is a gentleman named Bill Cotter, and Bill was a tremendous guy, and he just told me, he said, look, man, you can't be shy. You just got to get in there and do it. If you're doing something wrong, we're going to tell you. And so that kind of opened me up to it, and it's, like I said, they're just people, man. They can do anything we can do with a little bit of help.
Yeah, yeah. Well put.
Yeah, very, very much so. Do you have any association with Break the Barriers? So every year there's a big archery shoot down in Fresno, California. They are disabled archers, and they have quite a few of those wheelchairs you were talking about with the tracks, those track chairs. And, we'll go down there. We support them. We go down as a group, and we'll go and shoot the 3D shoot that they have. And now now the NFAA's picked up on it, and now it's a big national shoot. But it's called Break the Barriers, and it's all about supporting disabled archers and disabled outdoorsmen and women.
Never been part of that or worked with them, but, man, like you said, we're open for whatever, and that's what we do, is try to open doors for folks. So,
hey, yeah. Before I forget, Matt, why don't you, for everybody listening, plug the website. If you've got the social media, I know you mentioned the, what is it, Blue Collar Outdoors?
Yeah, Blue Collar Adventures. Is that's our buddy that he's part of our hunt for several years and videos it, and then produces a hunting video for his show, which is called Blue Collar Adventures. It's on YouTube. You can find that on there. Our website is www.NevadaOutdoorsman.org, and then we are on all the socials on Facebook and Instagram under the same moniker of Nevada Outdoorsmen and Wheelchairs.
Okay.
All right. And they can donate through that? Donate through the website?
We had it set up before to do that, but I think you can. I'm not 100% sure. The easiest way is just to get a hold of me. My phone number is listed all over that website, or get a hold of one of us, and we'll put you directly in contact with our accountant, Mark Paris, and he can handle that donation.
Gotcha. Okay.
What's the biggest need for the organization right now? Is it volunteers? Is it money? What's the big hurdle for you?
Well, we have some great partners, and I'm going to plug these guys, but Southwest Gas picked us up a couple years ago, and their employees have been phenomenal in supporting our group. I get to go out and talk to them a couple times a year, and they have sent so many people out in the field for us that it's just been outstanding. The donations, because like I said, it's an all expense paid hunt, man, and all that funding that we get goes directly to that, to whether it's to pay for taxidermy or a plane ticket or a kennel, a dog, you know. So any expense these folks incur, we try to cover for that, and it's license fees and that sort of stuff, tag fees, food for the week while they're here with us. So we'll always be graciously accepting of any kind of donation to our group. We're always looking for volunteers too, and like I said, it's we want folks that are in it for the right reasons, not to be on TV. It's to actually help these folks. The story's not about us; it's about them.
Yeah.
You bring that up. Have you ever had anybody, or is it just part of the agreement that, hey, if you come on this hunt, we're going to film it? Or have you ever had anybody say, man, I don't want to be on camera, I'm embarrassed Absolutely. About Every my year. Condition or whatever?
Yep. Yeah, not because of the conditions, but because of religious beliefs. And it happens. And so we just work around that.
Now, have you guys gotten out already this season? I know archery stuff, muzzleloader stuff, antelope rifles going on. Have you guys gotten any hunts under your belt yet?
So we tagged 5 buck antelope on opening morning.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a couple dandies in there, too. So we're actually working to produce the show on our web, on our Facebook page. And there's a Facebook page in Nevada Big Game Hunters, too. There's some stuff on there. Already from our hunts. So yeah, we're moving along, man. We've already been through our
5
our
in a day
and moving on to our deer and elk hunts.
Very cool. Now, how many of those do you have coming up?
We have 1 deer hunt, 1 mule deer hunt, 1 cow elk hunt, and 1 bull elk hunt coming up.
Now, how do you determine who gets,
great question,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah. Is it based on their ability? Who gets the bull elk tag and the cow tag and the deer tag? Because those, as you stated, those require a little more effort.
Yep, it's still a random draw. I mean, course, I would love to be able to take someone that's a quadriplegic on an elk hunt, but I just don't know that the logistics are there because of the way we have to set up a rifle to shoot and stuff like that. So there's got to be, there's a little bit of vetting on that. We get it done. You just adapt and make it happen.
Yeah, you just figure out a way to do it. All right, that is awesome.
I mean, that's what we look for, is, hey, our job is to, we never guarantee you're going to kill an animal, because it is a true hunt. It's a hunt. We guarantee a good time and at least one opportunity.
Okay. Have you ever had to turn anybody away for whatever reason? Say that example you gave, a quadriplegic, and their name gets drawn out of the hat or however it works. Have you ever had that situation come up?
We have not. So we have in the past had where we had a person's name come up, and they accepted the tag and were going through it, and then something happened with their health, and they weren't able to make it that year. And so typically what we've done, and this has happened a few times, what we've done is say, okay, well, we're going to bring that tag back to us. We're going to take somebody else hunting this year. You're going to get healthy over the year, and you'll be the first one on the list for next year.
So
we kind of guarantee them a tag, I guess, for the following year.
Yeah.
So because they, they were drawn.
Yeah.
But because of health reasons, they weren't able, They weren't able to make it that year, so we honor that and bring them out the following year.
Now, do you guys facilitate and or just provide the weapons system? You know, you mentioned the, I believe it was a woman earlier that had a special, she fired her crossbow with a special trigger.
If they need it, yep, if they need it, we provide it. We've done that a few times. We had a young man that came out of Texas that hunted with us a few years ago. His name was Duncan Tumby. And he has a lot of atrophy in his hand and had a, you know, had cerebral palsy and couldn't pull the trigger. But he had his own trigger system, which I thought was pretty ingenious. And it was actually like a hydraulic. So it was a syringe and he could hold on to that syringe and mash it into his leg. And it was like a hydraulic system that would fire the trigger. And so we've since done that as well. But there's a gentleman that lives in Reno, Tim Brapu, that has built all kinds of different trigger systems for us. And it's a small 12-volt system that seems to work really well. It looks like a Britney Spears microphone, right? But it's actually a switch, and you flip that switch, and it fires the gun. So,
okay. Ah, very cool. Hey, I'll give you anything you want to leave listeners with, Matt. We're talking with Matt Murray from Nevada Outdoorsman in Wheelchairs. We're coming up to the end of the show here, Matt, so any final thoughts?
Man, I just got to thank some of the folks that have helped us over the years and that continue to support us, Southwest Gas, the Williams family, Jeff Williams and his beautiful wife, Dessa, and the folks down in Eureka, the Miller family, Paradis. I mean, there's the list is on and on, and I know I'm missing folks, but, man, we really appreciate you guys believing in us and believing in what we're doing because it does actually help line up stars for folks.
Absolutely. Hey, Matt, cannot thank you enough for doing this, and thank you to everybody that tuned in today for Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Don't go anywhere. Tom Gresham is coming up next.